Welcome to Movies, Movies, Movies.
Bonsoir, everyone, and welcome to Movies, 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 the one place where after the state theatre premiere, Jen and I have ourselves looking at each other going, whoa, George Miller is 79 and looking fine. And that's because we went and saw Mad Max Furiosa, but I should actually be calling it from the mastermind, George Miller, Mad Max Furiosa, a Mad Max saga?
It's Furiosa.
Furiosa.
Not Furiosa. It's Furiosa.
So we got to see the next installment in the trilogy of any sort, and we're here basically to recount our experiences. I'm still recovering from the prop motorcycles that were perched out the front that I got to ride with my brand new ribbon booties that I'm wearing. We're giggling because the State Theatre opens up a part of me that is marital, because formerly I wanted to get married at the State Theatre, and also romantic. Jen, that's the show for today, but I'm wondering, do you want to maybe start with a tradish segment, or should we just go into a discussion about...
I just launch into Spotlight and I do all the different voices.
Well,
Spotlight, Spotlight, Spotlight. It's been a while. Since it's been just you and I. Actually, have we ever done this? Have we ever done an episode just you and I?
What we haven't done before is we've never done a podcasted episode at 11:18 p.m.
Is it 11:18?
Oh, wait. And now I'm peaking too much. I'm noticing that I'm peaking.
Pull it down.
I'm going to pull the anchor down. It's been a while since we've been you and I, and I'm ready to put this moment here because...
Okay, explain put this moment here.
Okay, so put this moment here is the little prayer that Jen and I say to each other, which is a direct quote from Kate Bushy Bush. It's from Jig of Life. It's the midpoint of the song where she kind of stops all the music, she stops the orchestration, and she just goes, I put this moment here.
And Andre and I say it before every time we do a take or a shoot or we need to... You know, go out on stage or talk to Sally G. We say, I put this moment here. And to our beautiful listeners who are still hanging on after all these years and all these false starts, all these breakups with FBI, we're back in Sydney for 2 months. We really want to put on the best season of Movies, Movies ever. I want to have old faces. I want to have new faces. I want to have the best interviews we've ever had. Can we take a breath and can we say it all together, Andre?
Oh, is that
count to three?
One, two, three.
I put this moment here. One thing that I'm surprised about with the podcast and how people still listen is that we have Australian accents, which is the first thing I'll bring up as a critique of this film. The film goes for a lot longer than Fury Road, I would say. Am I making that up?
I don't know.
I don't have the facts. It goes for a lot longer than Fury Road. And most of that is because Chris Hemsworth gets a lot more dialogue than Tom Hardy ever gets.
It's a talkie. This film is definitely a talkie.
It's a talkie's challenge.
It's a talkie's challenge.
And it's a lot of Australian accents.
And it is so conversational. And as you were saying before, the moments that draw you out of the film include the moments where politics is brought into play. And
there's a lot of that.
And there's a lot of politics. And we're
also... A lot of pontificating.
We also are feeling the debasing of... language and our thinking suffering as a result because we're pulled away.
There was moments of it where I thought this is kind of giving Tarkovsky. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what I mean when I say Tarkovsky? I know exactly what
you
mean when you say Tarkovsky. This is either a film that has no formula or no formalism. And I want that to be our first segment.
No formula and no formalism.
Yes. So,
because you were describing it as abstract expressionism.
Exactly. Tell us what formalism is so I don't have to, because I'll sound like a mad ass nerd if I do.
I was thinking of calling this episode Things, but I think that's what we'll call Things Will Be Different, Lucy McMahon's film. So hopefully we get another episode in between now and then. But formalism, I would say, is Things. I'm not ChatGPT and I'm not marking myself with ChatGPT. But how I would describe formalism for myself is that it's the things, it's the bits and pieces rather than the plot, the content, the thematics, the psychology. It's
the crumbs.
It's the cameras. It's the shots.
It's the choices that are made.
It's the choices. It's the things that go together.
And it's the interest in how those things are perceived by the audience.
And I think it's really interesting that you say that this film isn't a formula or formalism, because this is a saga. This is, you know, what, like the 10th Mad Max movie or something. And it has changed in iterations. It's not quite a remake. It's not quite a prequel. The thing that I would say has changed is the formalism.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And yet you say it's not a formalist movie.
Yeah, because I do truly believe that Mad Max 1 was a recipe. Mad Max number 1 was kind of, if you wanted to...
When you say Mad Max number 1, what are you referring to?
Mad Max number 1 is obviously Fury Road.
So we're not talking about Tina Turner.
No. Okay, Tina Turner is in...
But have you seen Mel Gibson's Mad Max films?
I have never seen Mel Gibson's. Oh my God, actually, Jen, that reminds me real quick. Do you mind if I do a hard little quick pivot?
Yeah.
So you know that famous story about the first Mad Max film? And when I say first, I mean Basement B3, because I'm talking about the 1979
The rape one.
You know the story about the dog on set?
No, I don't know.
So this might not make it into the pod, might not make it into the cut, but there is a famous story about how George Miller in the original Mad Max from 1979 wanted to shoot a scene where a dog is limping on the highway. And he suggested to the crew, hey, we're going to get this dog who's alive and we're going to break its leg. And then we're just going to film this scene with Mel and here's how we're going to block it.
The mastermind, George Miller.
And Mel said, hold up, Georgie G, I'm not letting you break a dog's leg and then have it just limp onto set. If you did that, literally, if you did that in front of me, I'm going to walk off this shoot.
Animal rights activist Mel Gibson.
Which is crazy because...
Who I've seen eat a steak with his bare hands.
And also because George is also a medical student graduate.
He was probably chatting to Rolf Dahir because famously Bad Boy Barbie, they were like, oh, we are going to kill this cat, but it's a rescue cat and it's going to get killed anyway. So it doesn't matter if we torture it for screen.
So maybe what you're saying right now is that all productions funded by South Australian film councils are just encouraging animal cruelty.
Well, they're not anymore, because what I will say about this film is every animal is entirely CGI and it shows.
That's why. Okay, and that's the thing. And then there's a moment in the film, the new Mad Max, which is probably Mad Max 9 at this point, a dog comes out with an amputated leg. The entire animal is CGI'd and the leg doesn't exist in real life. It's a total cartoon. I turn to Jen, I gasp. Jen doesn't look at me. And I think, wow, that's how you learn your lesson. And that's what Darren Aronofsky did for Noah. He said, I am not going to touch an animal. I am going to make them cartoons.
Wow. Noah.
Cartoons are the solution, is what I'm saying.
And I ultimately never saw The Whale, but I have seen Noah and the Whale.
Are you squid? Are you Noah or are you whale?
It's a squid in the whale.
But Noah and the Whale is actually
Mumblecore. But there was a squid in Mad Max. And I would say my favorite part of the entire movie is the squid that looks like the octopus that comes out of Lady Gaga's mouth at Coachella.
Yes.
Which comes out the back of essentially what I would call a silver bus as a shout out to Priscilla.
It's actually funny that you bring that up, because as I was taking a photo of myself riding the prop motorbike out the front of the State Theatre, I thought that this was my entrance to a Coachella performance. Shout out to Lana Del Rey. What you're actually implying right now is that George Miller is in fact putting on a Coachella performance with this film.
What I also wonder is when Stephen Elliott, famous gay Australian filmmaker, and I would say Australian New Wave filmmaker, makes his new Priscilla sequel.
I'm so sorry. You just said Australian cinema and then you named a director. You have to explain. Stephen Elliott.
So Stephen or Stephen Elliott, I think it actually might be Stephen, made Swinging Safari, which absolutely no one went and saw, with Kylie Minogue.
Yes.
And was one of our first films that we ever reviewed. But he is making a new Priscilla. He directed the original Priscilla. Also directed Welcome to Whoop Whoop. Did you ever see that?
No, but I'm still shocked at the new Priscilla that's coming out.
So that he's making a new Priscilla, and what I wonder is he going to take a George Miller approach and Fury Road the shit out of it, and it's just a bus?
Yes, and just a bus.
Because they found the original bus, but are they going to hype up a bus?
You just know there's going to be a lot of shoots happening at Carriage Works.
Are they going to jack it up?
There are going to be some Carriage Works shoots for that film, and they're going to need extras, and we are not going to do that work.
Okay. There's lots of ways to talk about Fury Road and Mad Max, and many of them end in us spiraling into the symbolism of, you know, a dystopian Australian future and the problems with that in general and the gas guzzling of it and, you know, Australia's wasteland. I honestly think that most of the people on CGI were hired just to erase wildlife. Famously, Fury Road had to move to Africa because there was floods and beautiful foliage in inland Australia. And as someone who's just been living in inland Australia, it's... lush. It's about as lush as Scotland. Most of that is buffel grass, which is introduced, and it's actually a huge problem.
I'm pointing a Papermate pen at you right now because I'm agreeing. And also, this film is heavily reliant on gas. I mean, someone say Lenolod Kina, because there is petrol in this movie. You were actually describing the film before I interrupted you with my aside about the dog's leg being broken.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Do you want to return to that?
No, I want to return to no formula or formalism.
No formula or formalism.
So what I would argue is that Fury Road followed a very strict Christopher Nolan formula and formalism, you are made
it's
aware...
It's Dunkirk.
The whole thing is Dunkirk.
It's a ticking time bomb.
It is sound design making you hypnotized and working on a somatic level.
It's there and back again.
It is. It's driving you forward. It's propelling you. Propel, the P word, is a word that you used coming out of Furiosa. And that is not how we felt in Furiosa. We are not feeling the intention. We are not feeling the... Basically, Furiosa, what Furiosa lacks is that little moving target that dogs chase in a dog race, that they have to go run down the court for. We are not seeing that in Furiosa. And that is ultimately something that I think made Fury Road such a an eye-dazzling bend.
Well, maybe it's my misogyny coming up because I have just had a realization, because I obviously didn't enjoy this as much as Fury Road. I am wondering if it has something to do with the shape of it all. Because I'm remembering, do you remember that time we had a threesome in Adelaide with someone who was obsessed with transport?
Yes, I do. The train one.
And he talked about how...
Trains are queer.
Well,
trains are gay.
Well, no, he didn't. What he said was that transport is designed in a masculine way to get people to and from work. And I would say Fury Road is about getting you to and from work. And this film is a circle. There's three sort of towns. I mean, excluding the first chapter, there's three towns. There's Gastown. There's the Citadel, where the water and the food is, and there's Bullet Farm.
You're revealing information to me that I did not know from the film.
Because this film is about world building, whereas the first one is about getting to and from work.
Mm-hmm.
And world building, I think, I would say, is more feminine. That reflects in, you know, this sort of favouring Anya Taylor-Joy. I would say, though, that the first film has more women in it.
Are you saying world building is more feminine in, like, a Sims kind of way?
I'm saying in a terms of when we had Yamcha with this threesome, which never happens. That would only ever happen in Adelaide.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, he told us that transport that is masculine goes in and out of the city, and transport that is feminine goes in circles, because traditionally the divine feminine...
runs around in circles.
Runs around the maypole.
Runs around the maypole.
And picks up food, picks up the kids, goes, like, does the things around the house.
Picks up the trash.
Runs around
and
in circles.
Then takes the trash outside, then takes the
and
trash
and we
inside.
Like to thank Australian women for ironing, doing the ironing. But anyway, so I'm just thinking about the circular motion of this film, the spiral of this film, versus the straight back and forward of the last film.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really have a point here. I'm just sort of talking.
Yeah, Furiosa really is about spinning around Kylie Minogue.
Fury Road kind of gave me a sugar rush.
Yeah.
And now I'm actually thinking about the film and all the little bits and pieces.
I know, because Furiosa really is spiral methodology. And also, it's also folding, it's the technique of folding ingredients into the bowl multiple times. It's almost like the Furiosa... Furiosa allure is that the compounded elements of the film are just being like lapped onto each other multiple times as a reminder that they are happening over and over and over again. It's almost out of control.
It's kind of Barbenheimer.
It's Barbenheimer. What we're not going to do in this episode is we're not going to talk about the B word.
Oh, okay, we'll cut it out.
But we're going to talk about the G word, which is George Miller, and also the reality that George Miller is in collaboration with his wife, who is his editor,
Margaret Sixall.
And I'd like to talk about how they have been quoted as saying that they understand each other so fully that they cannot get to an idea until they have both said it to each other. Now, I'm not bringing this up because of our collaborative practice, but I'm mostly talking about how do you think they take on a project like Mad Max and then try to, like, figure it out together? Are they...
like, you want me to guess?
I want you to kind of guess, yeah.
What do you mean?
the way I see it, the way is like, I guess...
What did Kirsten Dunst say, like, today? She said something like, you can really go to a bad place if you're in a really good place, which we constantly circle back to with all of our interviews where people are sort of saying horror people are happy people.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's ambiguous about this film is whether it's trying to be funny or trying to be scary.
Because it's neither
it's
of those
sort
things.
Sort of a liminal space in between, which makes me think they're kind of neutral.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're that happy or unhappy.
Which is funny, sir.
Which I relate to as someone who makes funny horror films. Mm. Would you call our films horror films?
I'd call our films accidentally funny. I would call our films unintentionally funny.
I'm sorry to make it about us.
No, we're bringing it back to us.
But if you're in Melbourne on June 25th, come to Acme because we're screening Grapestate.
You know, right now's a good time for me to say we are now about to play a trailer for Mad Max Furiosa.
You want to play the trailer?
Whatever you have to do. however long it takes. Furiosa.
For me, the trailer just didn't hit as hard as the first, as Fury Road trailer.
Yeah.
When it had the, who was the MX, XL, who was the guy that did the sound?
Who did the sound?
Who did the sound on the first one? It was like a DJ.
Oh my god, should I know this? Is this someone famous?
It was like something XL, Turbo XL or something.
Turbo XL.
And I'm pretty sure he's like in it and he's like on the guitar, but I don't know. But it just felt, I feel like Fury Road was a bit more Moulin Rouge in terms of like everything feeling like bam, bam, bam. You know, It Smells Like Teen Spirit. What's that amazing new SNL sketch? No, we're actually going to play the SNL sketch.
We're actually playing...
We're cutting to Ariana SNL. Grande playing, yes. Nicole Kidman and Ewan McGregor.
Trying to sing songs of the Moulin Rouge.
Sing all the mashups. One night in the name of love, waiting for tonight. Oh, well, you would be here in my arms, waiting for tonight. Oh, I've dreamed of this love for so long. It's been
wonderful. Oh no! You just coughed blood into a napkin. That's movie for dying. Jesus, take the wheel. In movie news, the Moulin Rouge's blades actually shattered and fell off.
I know. What's going on in Paris? Paris 2024.
Paris Olympics. Everyone's getting crazy. I want to touch on one last thing with Mad Max Furiosa, which is...
You do want to talk about the Byron Bayification of Utopia?
I want to talk about the Byron Bayification of Utopia, mostly because... I'm watching this film and I'm not believing that it's shot in New South Wales, and I'm actually under the impression that it is directly catered to Byron Bays.
Well, it's Broken Hill and my least favourite place in the world, Hay.
Hay is actually a Fury Road, to be honest.
We've stayed in Hay before.
We have stayed in Hay.
Can I tell you a quick story about one time I stayed in Hay, which is where a lot of this is based?
Sure.
One time I went to Hay on the way home to Adelaide for Christmas, and I remember going out into the street and... Everyone was standing out the front of a stage that was empty out the front of Target in 45 degree heat, and everyone was wearing kind of like loose fitting, like thongs that you know, when thongs are just flat from being burnt into the asphalt. And I went up to a woman, I said, "What are you waiting for?" She turned to me, mouth breathing, and said, "I don't know."
Oh my gosh.
I was just standing in the middle of the street.
Oh my god, that is...
In front of an empty stage out the front of a country Target.
That is... That's the climate talking. That's possession. That's deeply disturbed.
Yeah.
And I also think that speaks to Hay's dark, dark mystery, which I never want to go into ever again. The film has Ugetsu undertones. We were talking about that before.
All the best parts have Ugetsu undertones.
All the best parts have Ugetsu undertones.
And that was the same in the other film.
It's actually really funny that you bring up Ugetsu, because Ugetsu is a huge reference point for Kelly Reichardt, and that's a name that's been like floating around our orbit for the last couple of days. And I wonder if the reason why Furiosa was boring to you was because it was a little bit Kelly Reichardt in a lot of ways.
You think, yeah. It was
if we're talking about the divine feminine and the circular cycle, the circular motion of a story and like a film playing out, like, is this actually mostly a film about ATJ, Anya Taylor-Joy, just kind of running around in circles until she absolutely like loses control of herself? Maybe Furiosa is actually Reichardtian.
Well, it's Reichardtian in the way that it's a neo-Western.
It is a neo-Western, yeah. It's a Western without a horse.
It's a white person in Australia grappling with the horrors of colonization by addressing genocide in a really sideways way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it lets you imagine the horror of the violence that's happened in this country.
Because Anya is a woman taken away from her family. Mm. Is that a metaphor that we're using, or absolutely not?
The colony loves to use a white woman to express these feelings of violence. And I think as well... One thing that sort of gripped me is because I've always wanted to... The way that I always imagined if George Miller was to die and we Stieg Larsson kind of continue the Dragon Tattoo series, I would always put... Like, the idea that I always had was that you would pull out of a shot of the UK and actually just, like, people have desertified the UK and the whole thing was actually happening in Britain. Do you know what I mean? Britain ends up being the penal colony or something, and they've desertified the whole place. But what it does is it opens with it going down into Australia. You know, we sort of flip the world is upside down, and it spirals down into Australia, essentially into APY lands, and there's a little oasis where essentially only white people live with a few wind farms.
Mm. Oh my god, that's so...
And they pick an apple, which reminded me of Rainbow Chan. Because Rainbow Chan always talks about how the apple is how you learn the letter A, and that was the first point of losing her language.
When you open a film with like a crash zoom down into Australia, where does that crash zoom land? Because for me, it definitely lands on main character syndrome, me exiting a bus and I shout out to the bus driver, thank you, doesn't hear me, and I get off the bus. But where does it land for you? Like where does the camera land in the opening of your Australia film when we're coming crashing into Australia? And I mean, please don't say into a hot summer's day into a swimming pool.
No, I was honestly going to say straight into a toilet. Jeez. And then down all of the tubes into the sewers.
Flushed away.
I've never seen flushed away. But I used to love, there was a game I used to play with my cousins about like sending the socks to the dryer, or like it was like all of these conveyor belts and you had to get the sock to the along the conveyor belt.
That's
like,
actually very funny that you bring up flushed away, because there is a mousetrap board game element to Furiosa where there are a lot of contraptions, yeah, and a lot of like ventricular force, like a lot of pendulum force happening where everything is there are fulcrums.
I'm just looking at my phone right now and Margot Robbie is actually producing the Mousetrap movie.
You're joking.
Yeah.
You're actually joking right now.
Yeah, and do you know who's directing?
Who's directing?
Oh, no, I can't tell you. You're going to lose it.
I think I'm not going
to... Who's okay, guess.
Can I try and guess? Okay.
Who's directing the Mousetrap movie?
Okay, so obviously...
It's going to annoy you.
It's going to... Okay, well, if we're going to... Is it high end or is it low end?
It's middle end, but it's high middle.
Oh my God, please don't say Patty Jenkins.
No, it's a man.
It's a man.
Big clue, it's a man.
Big clue, it's a man. What if the Mousetrap film was quite literally directed... And please do not judge me right now.
No, go.
But what if it was quite literally directed by Paul Feig?
Oh, well, that would work.
That would work so well,
but she's
it?
Chosen Rian Johnson.
Oh, stop it, Jen. I don't want to talk about Rian Johnson because I don't want to talk about sequels too much, because I know that you've seen Knives Out 1 and 2.
Why did I do that to myself?
And you did that to yourself. And when we were comparing Furiosa to sequels, I was saying that it was probably closer to... Because I was referring to the fact that I can see Furiosa instead of Dune 2.
Yeah.
In the same way that I can see... What was the other sequel that we just had recently that just came out?
Wow. Challenges is a sequel to Itamama Tambien.
Challenges really is a sequel to Itamama Tambien.
It's Itamama Tambien.
So what I like about this discussion is that we haven't actually spoken necessarily about what happens in Furiosa, but
which means we can maybe release it before the embargo.
Which is, so ultimately this isn't a review. This is actually just...
It's not a review.
This is actually a possession.
I'm interested to hear what they have to say in Cannes, because they didn't really say anything other than it's a wild ride, buckle up at the screening.
Cannes really stinks up on you behind your back and doesn't really stay in the zeitgeist for very long.
Yes, we can.
Should we talk about Megalopolis?
Megaflopolis.
Megaflopolis. Because now we're doing movie news, it seems. There's something about Khan that isn't gripping me. Like, crap is not grabbing me by the balls. It's not dodgeball.
Do you know what it is?
What is it?
It's because it's an Andrea Arnold year.
Oh my goodness, it is.
It's not a Lynn Ramsey year, it's an Andrea Arnold year.
There are really two British female directors. There are two types of Khan. There's an Andrea Arnold, then there's Lynn Ramsey, and one of them isn't actually British. Also, isn't Andrea bringing two films to Cannes as well?
Don't tell me that.
I really feel like there could be a short film.
Unless I'm getting her Big Little Lies Season 2 Ice Cream Throw.
Oh my goodness.
I want Reese Witherspoon is the cop at the story convention, and she took Andrea Arnold out.
That is the sequel that we need. Okay. Let's reel off the sequels that we care about. Big Little Lies Season 2, Nymphomaniac Part 2? Nymphomaniac Part 2?
Nymphomaniac Part 2 is fab. I love Hey Joe. It ends with Hey Joe.
Pen 15 Season 2.
Pen 15 Season 2.
Matrix Reloaded. The sister films of Furiosa, both highway movies.
Two Towers.
Twin Towers!
It's Two Towers, not Twin Towers. We preferred the second tower to the first as well.
Twin Towers was the sequel that I came out of.
Because the second tower had more angles. I can't remember. I recently found out my mum's friend who... looked after me when I was a little kid. Her friend was in one of the planes. I can't remember which plane it was.
And died.
And she died.
I'm clarifying that
and
as if that
she was
could
married
be
to
disproven.
Anthony Perkins from Psycho, who was out bisexual. Oh. And she was the granddaughter of Elsa Schiaparelli.
You just reminded
me. Can you believe
that?
This is a bitch who worked like three jobs in wine country and just like lived in it. Anyway.
Oh, how did she know this? What did she say about Anthony Perkins?
Not enough, to be honest. I only found out that she knew these people when she was crying on 9/11.
So, speaking of crying on 9/11, Another sequel that I love is the Psycho remake.
You can cut that part.
I can cut that part. is the Psycho remake from Gus Van Sant. Another sequel that I'm down for. I want to end this conversation.
That's not a sequel. That's a remake.
It's a shot by shot remake.
The worst thing I could say. Could you imagine? Could you imagine if I came in and I was like,
no, the spanking that you're giving me right now.
If I was giving you a spanking about like what constitutes a remake. Well, I think what we should be talking about is I actually watched in the desert the Tina Turner Thunderdome. And I actually think that could be the best one.
That's the one to go for.
Well, I think everyone likes Mad Max 2 and everyone likes Fury Road. But if we're talking about what this film is like, it's actually closer to Thunderdome.
Mm.
And in that way, I think it's paying respect to Tina Turner, which I respect.
Which is a bit more Guitar Hero, I think.
And a bit more punk than Anya Taylor-Joy.
Honestly, dare I say, just a bit more dancey.
A bit more dancey. Do you know what else it kind of reminded me of was that movie? Did you ever see Joey? Scariest movie ever made.
The kangaroo movie.
The kangaroo fighting movie.
No, I absolutely did not see the boxing kangaroo movie.
It's so scary.
Do I even want to ask a follow-up or should we just leave it at that?
I just remember watching it really young in like primary school. It was rated G, but it was all about a kangaroo that gets stolen to the city.
Who's jacked?
No, it's like a little Joey.
Oh,
and then
cool.
It's like put into a ring of fighting kangaroos.
Rescuers Down Under. Another sequel that slaps.
No, it doesn't. It's awful. The first one's so good and ambient.
Oh, really?
Are you kidding me? I don't want to have this discussion with you.
Maybe I actually haven't seen the second one, actually.
This is my problem with things that are set down under, is it just has that ochre tone of Rescuers Down Under, and the yellow and redness of it all is so just repulsive.
Mm-hmm,
and I don't connect to it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I did connect with the opening sequence of Furiosa. I loved the women on the motorbikes getting stolen and trying to get back. That was gorgeous.
So we should have some final remarks.
What movie was that?
I think we should have some
final... We've done enough?
I think we've done enough, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Mostly because I'm sweating my little forehead off. If I could have some final remarks from us both, I think that Furiosa is a film that really proves that Byron Bay is in New South Wales.
Well, what I would also say about this film is you can tell that it was made in New South Wales because there was way more talking and drama.
It's the top pub at Byron Bay.
What I would say is it's the Woolshed on Hindley Street in Adelaide.
Oh my god, it's a mechanical bull.
It's a mechanical bull and a fake hen's party in Alice Springs.
It's really a bacon hash brown breakfast at a cafe by a beach.
It's a bacon hash brown breakfast, but there's two hash browns and the bacon's in between. There's barbecue sauce and it's a burger.
And the person across the aisle from you at the other table has mango smoothie and also Eggs Benedict.
I got sweat marks. I'm oily from this film.
I'm oily from this conversation because it's so hot in this studio.
I'm so sorry. Andre, you walked out just beaming and so happy and you just loved it so much even though you fell asleep for the end.
Do you remember clearly what my wording was and what I was saying?
I would love you to jog my memory.
It wasn't content. It wasn't material. It was purely semantics.
And you're a content manager at the moment.
I'm a content manager. I'm a content creator. I said it was syntax.
Can you just, for me, who doesn't understand really like... didn't make it past that intro.
Is the organization of words.
Or is that semiotic?
Choose your own adventure. It was just certain sequences that swept me into a semi-Fredo bliss. Into a semi-Fredo frenzy.
Movies like this don't really, like, the actors don't really matter.
No, they really don't. That's why I'm wondering what...
It's really just the clanky sounds.
That's why I'm wondering why Chrissy Chris was here. And what ATJ was doing, because ultimately I thought, could we not just get some more high caliber people who could actually imbue this with their personalities instead of having these kind of these fill-ins?
I'm nervous about talking about this because I'm in Sydney. I think Chris Hemsworth ultimately does a kind of handsome job of this. I think he really puts his all into it and does a villain.
Because he plays a magician.
But I just can't stand him.
No.
I just can't stand any second he's on screen. Every time he's back in the scene, I'm like bored. I think he's awful and I'm repelled by him. I can't watch Thor.
I think I know what you mean, yeah.
I've never found an actor more repellent than Chris Hemsworth.
Do you think this could have been better if it had just been Jason Momoa? Or are we not even do we not even want like a Hollywood
a muscle
movie?
Jock.
A muscle jock, yeah.
A muscle jock from Marvel.
Yeah.
It's not even about like who else could play this role. I think anyone putting on like an ochre Australian accent with like huge big bloody nipples is going to be annoying. Highlight for me is John Howard, famous for Sea Change, which I've been seeing a lot of in the ABC archives.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, these were a long cloak.
Jen is now listening to the cast of Furiosa and saying who they like.
Well, no one else is going to do it. George Miller couldn't even do it tonight.
George Miller couldn't do it tonight.
Literally like Anya Taylor-Joy, Chris Hemsworth, and the rest, can you just get out of here? I don't have time. And everyone just sort of like hobbles out onto the stage.
I know, he blames the runtime and not wanting to start late.
We're already like 400 minutes late.
I feel blessed to have seen Furiosa. And
oh my god,
the DJ before
Great
oh my god.
Southern Land.
Do you know what Furiosa actually is? It's Hard Rock Cafe. It's Hard Rock Cafe in Las Vegas. It is.
It's a well done steak.
You are actually waiting for it. Don't matter if it's black or white. Just appear in the background with a well done steak. And
do you think there's people who see George Miller and they're like as obsessed with him as people get as obsessed with David Lynch? Like when I hear the word mastermind, I think, okay, so George Miller's on par with David Lynch. And I think he probably is, you know, he's the Peter Jackson of Australia. But when I think about George Miller, I think about how he's David Lynch's favorite snack, which is just hot Cheetos.
Oh my God, really? Is that actually confirmed?
He just loves Cheetos.
That's fair enough.
He's like,
that's so cute, actually.
And that's George Miller. George Miller is like, it's not sand, it's Cheeto dust.
Oh my God, and that's where George Miller and I differ because I'm a salt and vinegar girl. Jenny, is it bad that I'm trying to get us off the air or do you want to keep talking? Because I'm happy to keep going.
You dragged me in here at 11 o'clock. I'm chatting. I'm just getting warmed up.
No, I know you're doing great, but we're already up to 40 minutes.
Okay, let's stop.
So I wonder if we should just call that a wrap.
Is there anything else you want to add? Do you have any feelings about like the cars, the motorbikes, the stunts?
Basically, my feelings...
What was immaculate to you? You love that one sequence where they're under siege by, you know, it's kind of confusing who's coming for them.
There was a fantastic sequence that I thought was truly, truly grabbing my life.
Great train robbery.
Grabbing my life by the balls, to quote the Dodgeball tagline, which was when Anya is introduced by way of a car chase. And like you said, we have our Priscilla megabus with flapping flag in the background and octopus floating in the sky from Nope, Jordan Peele, shout out. And Anya is just trying to like...
Inflatable art, Evelyn Roth, shout out.
There was an inflatable Roth moment from Evelyn Roth in the film. And I got exactly what I knew I wanted from Mad Max, which was I wanted a sequence.
You got a sequence.
I wanted sequential. I've never said this to anyone, Jen. I'm embarrassed to say it to the love of my life, but I wanted continuity.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I got in that moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, put an accent on my E and call me French, but sometimes I just love the physics and chemistry behind a hot air balloon or a parachute.
You called this film Two Towers, but I actually think it's more Braveheart.
Yes, but and that's... Are you saying that because... Are you saying that because you've only recently watched Braveheart, but you've also recently watched...
Forced to watch Braveheart. But no,
Towers.
But... And I have seen Mel Gibson in the flesh.
Take me on the journey of explaining that.
A piece of steak
that.
With his hands on the phone in front of me and Lily when we worked on Hacksaw Ridge, which I ultimately haven't seen.
So
it is about pacifism, which I'm not sure if this film is about pacifism. It's confusing.
Tell me that story like you're telling someone new to the pod.
So I, as one of my first jobs, I think I was still in uni, was a camera assistant on Hacksaw Ridge, which is essentially a film about pacifism. I saw Mel Gibson be incredibly racist on set. He also fell on his ass and everyone laughed. But no, actually, everyone went really quiet because they were nervous because he was in trouble. But one lunch break, I'm sitting there on a trestle table and I'm looking over at the lunch table and there's a Bain Marie with steaks in it. Mel Gibson comes over, yapping into the phone, probably to a producer, asking for more money, for more GoPros to like position in front of explosives in the dirt in Western Sydney because they blew up a whole hill to film this movie. Anyway, he walks over to the table with a fork, picks a steak up out of the Bain Marie, throws it on his plate, walks over to the plate, picks up the steak with his bare right hand, phone wedged between his ear and his shoulder, and just starts gnawing at it, just starts ripping it apart in front of everyone.
Mm. And that is my favorite directing style.
You stand Mel.
I don't stand Mel at all.
Yes, you do.
I've never seen...
Admit it.
I've never seen a single Mel Gibson film in my entire life.
You've like, seen Apocalypto.
Whoa, Jen, because you actually invited me to tell a very interesting story, which is that when I had my first iPod Touch, I connected to the Wi-Fi in my home and I loaded up Apocalypto, which was screening on YouTube, my favorite streaming platform. I paused it, hopped into a car, which was actually then going to go on a car trip to Port Stephens. And because of my pausing at the start of the drive and my inability to connect to Wi-Fi outside of my home, I watched all of Apocalypto on my phone in a car on a car trip. And it was sequential continuity riveting editing. Say it with me again. Sequential, consequential, riveting editing.
Or as my mum would say, relentless cycles of repetitiveness, which is RCR. Which
is literally us watching Furiosa tonight.
What came first, Apocalypto or the preset's Apocalypso?
It's so funny that you say that, because the art department and the art design of Furiosa was Empire of the Sun.
I'm really surprised that no one on Furiosa, like, at no point did it start going, I'm here with all of my people.
Okay, we cannot. This is the reason why we can't end movies, is because we haven't had the interview with the presets yet.
We haven't had the interview with George Miller either, and I'm really disappointed because he waved to us when we had our first film screening at the Chevelle.
So, the way that I want to be in a room privately with Mr. Furiosa, which is George Miller.
Perfect hair.
Actually just asking him, hey, so what's it like editing with your wife? What is it like in the edit suite? And you are making choices with her. And this is the question that I actually opened the show with. And what I'm going to end with is, Jen, how do you think this couple works?
Well, I think this couple works with the same way we work, is that I superstitiously ask you how old George Miller is, wondering whether it's 82 or 79, and sort of imagine the American election is going to go
exactly
the way it is based on the answer. And you say, it's 79. He's 79. He's still a young, sprightly man. He's got another film in him. Thank you for listening to Movies. My name's Jen. This is Andre. Say hello.
Hello. This is Andre.
Sorry, I'm bossing you around now.
Well, mostly what I was
and
thinking.
And we've just come from the world premiere of.
I'm so sorry. I interrupted you. Do you mind just saying that again? I'm so sorry. I cut you off just then.
No, it's fine. It's our style. Right?
Interrupting is our style.
Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, starring a little girl, Chris Hemsworth, and Anya Taylor-Joy. Wish I knew her name, but she's exceptional.
She was fantastic.
She was really good.
She's the Kaylee Spini of Australia.
She kind of is, in many ways.
I just had a thought just then. What if the name of our memoir, our joint artist memoir, is Girl Interrupting?
You know, I've never seen that movie.
Neither have I, actually.
But you know, Angelina Jolie was talked out of doing the Nigella movie, but she was signed on at one point. There was going to be a Nigella movie. But I actually think Rachel. I actually think Rachel Weisz would have been a better choice.
There was never a BBC Nigella movie. There just never was. Let's make it.
How to eat.
How to eat. Wow. It should more like how to eat out.
Nigella bites.
How to eat out 3 times a day.
This podcast is produced by FBI Radio in Sydney. Find more at fbiradio.com/podcasts.